नमस्ते। हु इज नॉट फेमिलियर विथ शिव और शिवा और शंकर शंभु महादेव एंड द मेनी अदर नेम्स विद विच ही इज कॉल्ड एन इंडियन थॉट, बट वेरी फ्यू नो दैट इवन बिफोर वॉट वी कॉल टूडे एज द वैदिक थॉट एंड द पौराणिक experience, Vedic experience in the Puranic thought. If we dig deep into even the ancient religions of Babylonia and Assyrian, Mesopotamian and even Egyptian, Greek of course, you will see that there is the Shiva. Only over a period of time we know that India is the only country which has preserved the sense of the sacred, the cosmogony of the gods and their complex workings in this vast and wonderful creation. The image of Shiva that we all hold dear to us, the familiar image, is of course the ascetic of ascetics, the lord of tapasya, who is sitting atop the snow peak mountains of Kailash and lost deep in his trance, and by his side Adi Shakti, Mata Parvati, and the two wonderful children, Ganesh and Kartike, and the bull, Nandi, who is to Shiva like Hanuman is to Lord Ram, right there, both as a guardian force and one who can communicate all that is happening in the outer world to Shiva's consciousness immersed in trance. This is the image which we see largely in the Puranas, though Shiva is even there in the Vedas. So what are these images and some of the legends associated with Shiva? As we know, they are deeply symbolic. Not that Shiva is only a symbol. Shiva is a reality. Like Krishna is a reality. Vishnu is a reality. Brahma is a reality. All the gods are a reality. And this world is a reality woven by the gods because he is real. Jagat Satyam Namithya, Brahma Satyam Namithya, because they are all dreams of the one who alone is real. So some of these legends we'll touch upon with regard to Shiva. One, he is Swambhu. So why he is Swambhu? Because he is the first born, but born out of his own tapas. No one created him, nobody gave birth to him. He is created by his own tapas, Swambhu. So we call Shambhu. That's our way of putting it across. And we know that famous legend where we see Lord Vishnu, out of him, out of the navel emerges Brahma. And they both wonder, who is greater? Who is our origin? And then Shiva manifests as the concentrated mass of light. The original Jyotirling. It's a very symbolic thing. Jyotirling is not just Shiva. Of course, that is there. It's beautiful. But the Jyotirling is the first manifestation of the Supreme as light, concentrated mass of superconscient light. It's also known as Pragya. It's Purna Pragya. What is happening in this Pragya? That which is beyond. There's something still beyond. The Satchidanand, and beyond the being of Satchidanand, beyond being and non-being, in whom the Divine Mother creates the stir of creation, and the first being to hold all the seeds is Shiva. He holds the seeds of creation in that superconscient light. But these seeds are inert. They are held within him in that mass of light, Pragya. And then these seeds are released into Rajogund Sampann Brahma. So he takes, receives all these seeds. So he has to create. So again, when we go back to the ancient terminology, Brahma becomes Hiranyagarbha. That's how he is described, the golden womb of all things. And then Brahma hands them over to Vishnu, the Virat, who puts them in order. He has to maintain the balance. You can't just scatter these seeds casually. So Hiranyagarbha is the author of dreams. So in Brahma, they are in the dream form. And then they manifest outwardly. Just the process which is akin to all of us, all creation. Within us, there is a self we do not know. which is beyond knowing and not knowing, if you may say so. Then we become aware of something like a self in us, and then this self dreams. Even if all the dreams are not, the self exists. And then we dream, we imagine, we conceive, we think, we feel, we will to be. And then there are actions and things begin to take a physical form. So this is how the creation proceeds. And in each creation, then the last recipient, Lord Vishnu, he has to maintain it. So he keeps taking avatar to, you know, keep the balance right. So everything is arranged, something like a great epic poem which is being written with the cosmos as the page of cosmos. And then when all the dreams that have been put into the lap of Brahma from Shiva, they are exhausted. It's like you've written a whole story, epic. So what do? Now Shiva, who has released these seeds, starts drawing them back. So then we have a giant dance of Shiva toward the past. It's very interesting. He is the one who has led them forth into creation. He is the one who can absorb them back into himself. That's why we see he is at once creator, Nataraj, as well as he is the one who is Ashmead, sits atop the mountains. You have to die to yourself to arrive, reach Shiva. Not even in the dream world. That's why that samadhi is Susupti. Even in the dream world, what is known as Savikalp Samadhi, one cannot arrive at Shivatva. Because still one is in the dream world. Dream world is not just the way we dream. All kinds of conceptions, thoughts, systems, structures, philosophies. As long as you live in that, you cannot arrive at Shiva. And that's why Shiva is often shown as someone who defies all rules and regulations. And that is the problem of Mr. Daksha Prajapati. He is Prajapati. So what is Prajapati? Prajapati is, it's very interesting. Prajapati is born from Brahma, Manas Putra. So Brahma's thoughts, conceptions are there in Prajapati. Now he has to give them a shape. And therefore to give them shape, he has to worship Vishnu. So he accepts Brahma and Vishnu. And according to these conceptions, he arranges a world with certain rules, regulations, order, etc., etc. And when the divine has decides ki no, I want to create a new world order, so what does he do? He sends his own force, Mata Sati, who is none else but Adi Shakti, into that realm of ignorance and born as Daksha's daughter. She apparently seems she is born within the framework, but she cannot be in the framework. So she always seeks Shiva, the beyond. She wants to go towards him. But Daksha Prajapati knows that would be dangerous, too dangerous. You see, that's the union of VC, but we'll come to that a little later. So there's always, he's trying to keep them apart. But then things happen, they get married, which means material nature, which the Divine Mother has been born as material nature, now once again unites with the Lord. Now when this union takes place, it means now this is what the entire creation is about. Now it is becomes risky, because if this union takes place, it is goes beyond the rules and regulations and frameworks of the mind. This is what we see in Savitri. Toward the end, he says, if all were gods and not men, it would change the order of things. There will be chaos. So he doesn't want it. So he conspires and wants to hold a yagna. So Prajapati holds a yagna. Yagna is where everybody comes and puts the ahuti, and then all the gods and the creatures of the world are nourished by it. So yagna is a beautiful, it's not a conception, but for the sake of it, we can say that it's a beautiful truth wherein we all put our little bit, but everybody shares it. It's like, you know, somebody makes the rice, somebody grows the pulses, you bring together, somebody cooks the khichdi. But as when eating is concerned, everybody is there. You can't say that, no, only those who have cooked will eat. Those who have cooked usually don't eat because they are so satiated by the act of cooking. So this, in this great yagna, he does not invite Shiva because Shiva doesn't fall into the frame. This is the problem. He wants Shiva to walk in like a gentleman, to follow code and conduct, code of conduct, norms Shiva wouldn't follow norms. That's why you see the rebels, the asuras. Shiva loves them because they break the old order to that extent. So Shiva tells them that, well, don't go. He tells Sati, this is a plan, ploy to once again separate creation into two. One the realm of Shiva and one of material nature. Sati is representative of Avidyamai Maya, same truth, who will become Vidyamai Maya, Parvati. So anyway, she comes, and when Shiva is not called, and rather he's disrespected, who respects freedom? Too much freedom is too dangerous. Live within the pall of society. Shiva always lives beyond Samshan. That's his place. You want to meet him? Go to the grave. You can't meet him. He's a strange, wonderful contrast. He's a mendicant. He's depicted as a beggar god. He has nothing with him. And yet somebody who can give anything and everything. That's the majesty of Shiva. So Sati, we know that she enters into the fire. And Shiva comes with, rather he doesn't, he comes much later. He sends Veerbhadra. You know, people often ask me significance of Sri Aurobindo's relics, and I tell this story. Shiva just plucked a hair from his matted locks and threw it on the ground, and out came Veerbhadra. And the entire army, navy, air force, if I may add, of Daksha Prajapati cannot match him. So much so that he prays to Narayan for help. Because Narayan has promised him that I'll always help you. Narayan comes and says, fool, you want to pit me against Shiva? And yet, because he has promised, he is there. But ultimately, nobody can stop the carnage. An entire old world order is gone. Sri Aurobindo speaks about this story in his early writings, Bande Mataram. And when the order is gone, all the gods are confused. Now what to do? They need the Daksha Prajapati. So they ask, please do something, because Daksha Prajapati is beheaded now. Beheaded is what? All the thought conceptions with which he is going to is gone. Now actually he is also freed. He is supposed to hold those thought conceptions of Brahma and govern the world. Now he doesn't have any. So Shiva, the ever benevolent, beneficent, quick to please, with Belpatri you can please him. He's okay. He's the giver of all life. He releases life into creation. That's why. All the seeds of creation. So he says, okay, get any head. And of course, there are some specifications. So they get a goat head. And the divine surgeons, who never make a mistake, Ashwin Kumar's. This is a story, by the way, of Ashwin Kumar's coming and treating one of the sadhaks of the ashram, Prithvi Singh Nahar, recounted in his book. So Ashwin Kumar's, they come. Now there is melee, hurry, because they have to do it hurriedly. If they delay, creation will dissolve completely. So they stitch the head the other way around. As such, goat's head is retrogression. But now when they put the head backward, it creates a funny situation. Every step forward is actually a step backward, and every step backward is actually a step forward. So there is utter confusion. So Daksha Prajapati says, I think I'll go to penance so that I get back my proper identity. That's where the story ends. Meanwhile, Shiva roams the quarters with Sati, the dead body of Sati on his back. Who is Sati? She's the power that has gone into the old creation. She's the Adi Shakti, but has become Avidyamai Maya, and now she has burnt in that great holocaust of the Divine Mother. It's an amazing sight. Imagine, he who is beyond all feelings, all grief, even beyond life, when life ceases, he alone lives, he alone is. And that Shiva is moving with grief on all the quarters. Grief because it's a world that has rejected the utter freedom and delight of the divine. So as he moves, but without Shiva, even creation cannot be. So Vishnu Bhagwan, usual strategy, he cuts the pieces of Sati and they fall all around what we are calling today as Akhand Bharat. Join the dots of the Shati, all around you will see Akhand Bharat. So all around, since then, Akhand Bharat is in existence. But that's a different subject. So Sati goes, Shiva goes into trance. Where does he go into trance? He is absorbing all the seeds and out. When Shiva withdraws all the seeds back into creation, everything is gone. Life is gone. Life is to spring forth. So on the higher planes, Mother Sati is again born as Mata Parvati, purified from the Yajna. Now she must embody a new creation. The old is gone. It's the story of transformation from the old to the new creation. And she has to now prepare to receive Shiva. Mata Sati, it was like, okay, come. He accepts her love, but she's not ready. The creation is not ready. So Mother Parvati, so this readiness is beautifully described in the story of Navdurgas. And we all know it. It's all about the awakening of Kundalini, how in individual life, from the base, Muladhar, where we have Shailabala, the daughter of the mountains, hard, rocky, inert mountain, which matter is, the flame is born. That's why Shivindu uses even Savitri, the flame child, birth of the flame. Flame child is literally, you know, Shailabala, born in the mountains. And then she climbs Brahmacharini, Chandraghanta. You'll see all the ranges till she reaches Kalaratri. She has to abolish everything. Known, unknown. It's a night of God, which today we celebrate, but very few can really celebrate. Ready to lose all conceptions, all systems, theories, beliefs, non-beliefs. Then there is Mahashivratri. Otherwise, it's only party. All conceptions, everything is gone. Kalaratri. Then comes, we all know, Mahagauri and Siddhidatri. Then comes the perfection. So, Mata Parvati, journey we see towards Shiva. But Shiva is in deep trance. He's not ready to release. This is the state where, which is divine inertia, which gets reflected in material existence. He's just not responding. He is holding all the seeds, but these seeds have to be released. Who will release it? Who else but the power of life, love in matter? You see, matter aspires through life, light and love. So Kamadev comes into play. He says, okay, I'll do it. Okay, he tries. And then we know the story that Shiva releases these seeds through the third eye. But when he releases these seeds, Kamadev burns. He is literally gone. Does he die? No. He changes into Anang, without limbs. He becomes universalized. So this is the first act of Shiva. It reveals the first act. It's the birth of love in creation. And that love is universal, impersonal. Those who reach towards Shiva, people think that they've, you know, sometimes divine love, Mother has spoken about it, may seem like cold. If you don't understand that divine love, it will look like cold, impersonal. But there is within it the deep personality which is hidden, that intense intensity which few can hold. It looks like that, seems like that. So Kamadev becomes Anang. Of course, we know the rest of the story, being born as Anirudh. That's another part of the story, very beautiful. Because all these four gods of the Vaishnava tradition, they have their own meaning and significance. Anyways, for the moment, we come back to Shiva. When becomes Anang, then Mata Parvati and Shiva, they get married. What is their marriage? This is the union of material nature and the divine soul. Shiva is the masculine element, the bull, and Mata Parvati is the feminine force, the one force, which has two aspects. So the two come together. That is what we see in the Shivalingam. Why it is so sacred? Because it's a reminder. This is our goal, to join the two ends. Material nature, which receives the divine soul within it. And this is a perfect union. It is yet to be established, But it is there on some subtle plane this has been conceived. So it exists. And that's where we see the idea of Jyotirling, that pragya, completely it must be held without any distortion, because in Hiranyagarbha, as it passes from layer to layer, there are several gods which come into play. Each one adds his own little bit. So when the two come together, then who is born? We have beautiful birth of Kartikeya. Kartikeya is the warrior god, and he is Deva Senapati, who rides on the peacock. So who is Kartikeya? He is born of this union of material nature and of Shiva, the divine soul. So within us, it is individually representative of the psychic being. In material nature, it carries the touch of the divine, the two together. And at the cosmic level, it has the same equivalent. And he is the one who wars. All the gods follow him. Whenever the psychic being awakens, all the gods come, they rally. And then the victory is won. Without the psychic beings awakening and the gods rallying behind, we may fight with darkness. That's why Shubhendu says, don't keep fighting with it in ignorance. First find this. This is the important element. So Kartikeya is born, and we know that he is always warring. So Divine Mother wants that little one who can be with her. And we know the story of Ganesha. He becomes the cute little baby. So this is the same truth. Two aspects of the soul. One, where it is always warring against all that is dark. The deadliest asura who would die of none else but the one who is born to Shiva. This was the Vardhan Yedas, no? Who was that asura? I keep forgetting his name. Better to forget anyways. Tarkasura or somebody. Anyways. Not important to remember their names. But the names of gods we must remember. So Kartikeya will annihilate him, because he has asked that only if Shiva's child is born, that can kill me. In a way, he has hastened. See what asuras do? They try to create problems, like nowadays. I don't want to take the name of another asura we heard yesterday, who with his money wants to create a problem. But you know what happens? They hasten. So this is the paradox. Because of Tarkasura, Shiva and Parvati have to get married. And Kartikeya has to come into existence. And the asura is slain. So, but Kartikeya is always like on the, you know, warlord. He is always in the southern parts. Shiva is seated. Somebody has to be near. So the same psychic being has these two aspects. One is as Kartikeya, who is the warrior of the worlds. And the other is quietly sitting in the mother's lap as the child, divine child. And yet, we should not underestimate this divine child, because he has the power of knowledge that removes all obstacles. That's what Ganesha is. Power of knowledge that can remove all obstacles. It has no ego. It has been right at childhood, because he's born with such power. So the lesson of humility, head is gone. He's born without an ego in the very beginning, that has been taken care of. So this is the psychic being in us. Both are brothers. Both have their own function. One knows that if I am centered around the divine, everything is in the divine. The other knows that I must also engage in the manifestation and win the victory for the divine all around. So we have these two children of Shiva. Shiva has a daughter also. But that's a different story. Let's go back to Ashok Sundari. But we'll just come back to this part, back to the story of Shiva. So we see in this story so many, another marriage itself is a very interesting marriage. Why? Because in marriage of Shiva we see all the elements, not only the gods, the seers, the sages, Gandhar, but also along with them we see asur, bhoot, rakshas, pisach. What kind of a thing is this? Everybody is shocked again. They ask Parvati, are you sure? Yes, I am sure. He is coming on a bull. Just imagine what royalty. Only Indian thought conception can create this. Our God is not coming in Mercedes and, you know, so beautifully he comes on the bull. And all of these are coming. What is this? In this, divine marriage, everybody has a hope and chance. If material nature and the divine soul can come together, the asura, the rakshasa, everybody has a hope. He is the hope of the hopeless. And therefore they are dancing with joy. Because they know that we will go, and Mata Parvati makes no distinction. Though Indra and other gods say, you want us to be with them together? Like some people say, I don't want to say where. You want us to be together? Yes. It's the divine marriage, divine's home. So they are all together. And she gives all of them nice kheer. She makes kheer, wonderful kheer. It's worth tasting. Kheer always representative of concentrated knowledge. She gives that knowledge, and the rakshasas, the asuras, they don't know how to eat it, but slowly they learn how to eat it. She gives them a little test. That's my addition. That though you can't eat, make others feed. So asuras can't do that, and you can't bend your, no, it says you can't bend your elbow and eat. How do they make, without bending elbow, how do you eat? So they are throwing here and there. Then he says, learn something from the gods. What are the gods doing? Feeding each other. Unity. Fraternity. Equality. So they also start doing it. They change, you know, by contagion and company. So it's a very beautiful story of how everybody can be redeemed only when matter is transformed. That's why we see that when Narada descends in the Book of Fate, and as he sang, the asuras wept with joy. So we have this conception of asura and the gods have as if they are eternally locked in fight. No, they too have a chance. Who are they? They have absorbed the poison of the earth. What is the poison? Bitterness, jealousy, anger. They are also doing a service to the divine. This is not a good way to serve the divine. But they have absorbed. Because why? We know that story, Sagar Manthan. How do things in creation emerge? There is this inconscient, aprakritem salilam, in which that superconscient has hidden itself. And out of that, things emerge through the great churning. And we see that Vishnu has become the great turtle, and Meru, and Vasuki becomes the one rope. And then as the churning goes, asura, rakshas and devas both are required. That means strength and intelligence both are required. That's why Sri Aurobindo says in Durga Strot, Mother Durga, rider of the lion, give us the force of the titans, the character and intelligence of the gods. So this is how, when both aspects, strength and sweetness, intelligence and force, they both come together, then we see different things emerge from the great ocean. But before the nectar of immortality, we see emerges poison, kalkut. That's why when we were invited today, I was a little, will we be asked at the gate, have you taken poison before you are allowed at entrance? Because only after you have taken the poison can you become adhikari of bhang. Bhang is ecstasy, delight. None can reach heaven who has not walked through hell. So first, Shiva takes that poison. That's how he becomes the blue-stained, blue-throated ascetic. But this blue-throated ascetic who has stained his throat with poison can give life. He is the life of all that is spiritual seeking and spiritual finding. Therefore, he has Chandrasekhara on his head. See, it's so amazing. We know that story, so I'm not going to talk about it in detail, that Chandrama is going around, he's apparently quite flirtatious, and Daksh Prajapati curses him, you die. You have not done well to all these nakshatras. So finally, Chandrama, because he's moving all around, no? It's a symbol. He is not staying in one house, he's constantly moving. So he goes to Shiva. You are the only one who can release me from every curse and give me life. He says, okay. But the life I'll give you will be, you will wax and wane, but I'll hold you so that even when you are down, you will again start living again. So the entire journey of the spirit, moon is the symbolic of the spiritual mind. It's rise and fall. All this he holds upon himself. So he's Chandrasekhara. And what about the great serpent? This was asked to the mother. Mother, what is that serpent? She says, it is the force of evolution. See, even in material nature, from that serpent, birds flow in the sky. Nature reproduces. Of course, there are hostile forces also. Which, if you see a black mamba, it's not force of creation, evolution, but a hostile force. But the serpent, especially we know the Naga, you know the way he stands and he's king of serpents. So it's a force of evolution. Iridescent serpent, white serpents, all these. So it's a force of evolution that he holds upon his body. But for this evolution, first one must die to the old self. There is no evolution which can come. Even to take a forward step, we must leave the step behind. There is no way we can move forward if we are holding on to the step behind. So these are the magnificent stories of Shiva, many, many others. But I think I'll read Sri Aurobindo's poem, and through that we will take the ecstasy, the delight, the somaras, and the greatest intoxication that one can ever find is the rhythm of Sri Aurobindo's poetry, for me at least personally. So there are 3-4 poems Sri Aurobindo has written on Shiva. Of course, there is mention of Shiva in Savitri. And we should not see, Shiva is there in the superconscient, but he enters into the inert state. Because all that superconscient is taken as seed and enters into the inconscient. So he also becomes the inconscient creator. So that's what we see in the dance of Kali. That Shiva is lying. The divine offers his own breast. On Shiva's breast is the eternal dance, and she is dancing. But Shiva also becomes the cosmic dancer. And as he dances, fire sparks fly, giving rise to life in all its forms and modes. So these are many aspects of Shiva. But this is a poem, Shiva, the inconscient creator. It doesn't mean Shiva is inconscient. It means the superconscient who becomes the inconscient. Because in the hierarchy of evolution, we see things emerging from the inconscient. Why? Because he is hidden there. So in everything that evolves, there is the Shivatva. Even in the electron, there is, you know, first thing that emerges are like electrons, fire sparks. And Sri Aurobindo says, in that fire sparks, electron, this is a poem called Electron. Shiva in his fiery chariot rides. In human beings, in us too, Shiva wrestles with the world's grief. In us too, Krishna seeks for sweetness and joy. But Shiva and Krishna are a single God. So first, Shiva wrestles with the world's grief, absorbs in all of us. Whenever there is misery, pain, Shiva is active, he absorbs, then Krishna comes. So in Tantra tradition you have this, first you have Pashupati, the lord of the animal nature. But at the end, in Tantra, you have Gopal. Now this animal nature has changed into cow, the bull has changed into a nice cow. You can hug a cow, huh? Don't hug a bull. For bull we have fight and we stop. So that's brute force, masculine. Not a very good thing, not a compliment, but okay. But when these masculine elements are needed, then Krishna comes. First, Mahavir and Balram. Mahavir is the name given in Vaishnava tradition to Shiva. It's the same thing. Then comes Krishna. So Krishna comes later. So we see in this trinity, we have Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh. Where is Krishna? So that's what we will see, how Sri Aurobindo reveals the truth of Krishna. Better we read it, but first this poem, let Krishna remain a secret. Not a secret anymore, but still. Where is Krishna in the Trinity? Has this question ever occurred? Is he only the avatar? Where is he? He is everywhere and in everything, but so is Shiva. So is Brahma, so is Vishnu. What is Krishna doing there? If we read, okay, let me just speak of that, then we'll come. In Savitri, when we read, the fourfold being is the Chatushpad Brahman, the same thing. Sri Aurobindo starts with Virat. Virat is Vishnu, infinite consciousness. And so by his side is Lakshmi, who has come out of the churning. So as creation comes, she must put everything in harmony. She is the goddess of beauty and harmony and love. Look at the material creation, how beautiful she has made, till man came on the scene. Man is born abnormal because he has to create a new normal. So this is the problem. Then he describes Hiranyagarbha, author of dreams. So he is the one who is filling everything with a creative thought, symbols, visions, subtle worlds. And then comes that superconscient light. Behind these two, there is a third spirit. Sheer mass of superconscient light. By its fear, the inconscient does its work. Because Shiva is hidden inside. So inconscient better follow what he is doing. See? And Brahma's consort, born out of him. So he sees the daughter as well as his partner and mate. She has to sing the Veena, rhythms have to go, Nad has to come. But Shiva is the original force. That's why many times Mata Parvati is referred as Adishakti. But then after these three, Shobindo describes the being who is behind, blissful Krishna forever. So when we trace it from the other end, then it is that of which nothing can be said. He's at once being and non-being and beyond. But for purposes of creation, how does it happen? That of which nothing can be said, the Divine Mother starts a stir, and then there is impulsion to create. And out of this comes Satchidananda. So Satchidananda is fourfold. Sat, existence. Brahma is infinite existence in the supermind. Consciousness, Chit. Chit has Chit tapas. It's knowledge and force. So infinite consciousness is Vishnu. In supermind, this quaternary is one. Together, fourfold. Then comes force. Infinite force, Shiva. And then comes infinite Ananda, Krishna. So this is among the many things that Shrivinda has done. He has brought forth the quaternary instead of the Trinity. Something very interesting. Because Satchidananda is fourfold. So there has to be a quaternary. So in supermind, they are all one. They are each an aspect. So what does supermind does? That Satchidananda, which is beyond, it brings out all this quaternary. So in supermind, we have all these, but they are still together. Now the creation will start. So then we have the Pragya and the Shiva as Pragya. And then we have Hiranyagarbha, Brahma. Then we have Vishnu as Virat. So this is the way the creation starts. And then it goes into the inconscient. And from there, it emerges. So Shiva, the inconscient creator, a face on the cold, dire mountain peaks, none can climb. Grand and still, its lines white and austere, utter purity, which means not only no desire but no ego. From there starts the whole problem. Moksha, match with the unmeasured snowy streaks. You can't measure him because he's beyond the cosmos. Cutting heaven, implacable and sheer. Cutting heaven. It goes beyond the heavens and is implacable and sheer. Alone. Above it, a mountain of matted hair. Aeon coiled on that deathless and lone head. He holds the aeons on his head. The cycles of creation which will come and go. In its solitude, huge of lifeless air. Why? Because life is not yet born. It is he who has to release life. If he doesn't release life, it stays in a seed state. So lifeless air. Round, above, illimitably spread. A moon ray on the forehead, blue and pale. So blue, we know the etheric space and where this light begins to emerge. Stretched afar, its finger of chill light. First is that birth of light which begins to emerge. It will create space. Wherever this light will go, will expand into space. This is the ether which scientists have for the moment discredited just a couple of hundred years back. Again it is going to come back because it's the primordial state of matter. Illumining emptiness, stern and male mask of peace, indifferent in might, its force one with unimaginable rest. Peace, but a peace which is full of might. He may not say anything. He may be quick to Asura comes, praise, okay, take. Why? Because he's like that. He knows. First he knows that Vishnu is there. He'll take care. And second, he knows this is the best way to annihilate. Third, he has some sympathy for these fellows because they have chosen to take the poison. And fourth, he knows that none can surpass him. So, indifferent in might. He doesn't have to show that he is mighty. But out from some infinite bourne now came, over giant snows and the still face, a quiver and color of crimson flame. Now comes love vibrating with life. This love will become Parvati. This is what is the birth. Crimson flame. The color of love. Fire point in immense cities of space. Light spear tips reveal the mighty shape. In that one can adore and see some outline of the face. He's beyond all this form, but some kind of an outline. This power of love which has gone into creation as the divine mother who will eventually build all these forms for his abode. A form appears. Look at this wonderful line. Tore the secret veil of the heart's hold. There is a veil none can pierce except the divine mother. So she comes as the crimson flame. And in that flame one can see the veil is torn and the outline of a face. In that diamond heart the fires undrape, living core, a brazier of gold. Then that fire, that original builder of all the worlds, that fire, truth, supramental, is hidden inside like a brazier of gold. This was the closed, mute and burning source. That pragya, closed, you can't cross. In Hiranyagarbha, cosmic consciousness, you can go up to that point and come back. Closed, mute and burning source, whence were formed the worlds and their star dance. From there the seeds were released into the cosmos. But that itself is closed. You can't enter there and know what's happening there. Life sprang, a self-wrapped, inconscient force. Love, a blazing seed from that flame trance. So from that trance, from that heart comes out life and love vibrating into that inconscient and start, life begins to evolve. So this is the beautiful image, description of Shiva, who is everywhere and nowhere, who is beyond and yet in all things. In a way, this is true of all the gods, to be fair. They're all creators in their own right. Shiva is the creator in the sense he holds all the seeds of creation. And Brahma is the creator because he is the one who takes them and gives them conceptions. Every creation, material creation, is a conception. If you look at a mountain, it's a conception of strength. If you look at an ocean, it's a conception of vastness. So this Brahmaji is creation. Vishnu, he is a creator because he gives them material forms which are appropriate to those conceptions. Where is Krishna? He is the original trickster who started the game. The delight which stirred. Everything starts from there. And beyond the divine mother, the mother of the gods. And yet beyond, of which none can say. So this is the whole mystery of creation. Now, in the next poem, Shivinda brings us a little closer. This, of course, we know. But we know that Shiva has an aspect, two aspects. One is Ashutosh, easy to please. so easy to please that one day Asur Mata Diti says, it's unfair, you are being unfair. All the gods have heaven, all the Asuras have this Patal Lok. Of course, gold is there, petro gold. Heaven, you have peace, if you value peace. So she says, okay, what do you want? I want my children also to go to heaven. Fair enough. So what do they have to do? Somanatheshwara, Jyotirling. You just pour milk or water and pass. That simple, yes. All the gods don't know what's happening. They come and tell, sir, I know you are the greatest of all, but Devoke Dev Mahadev, why are you doing this to us? He says, don't worry, that's... Shiva won't answer because he's not answerable to anyone. Vishnu will explain. Shiva doesn't explain. He just does, acts, because he's pragya, no? He knows, sees, how can he explain why he's doing what he's doing? So all of them start passing, they're very happy. Mother Diti is happy. And then they go. And when they go into the abode, they start, asur ki vritti to vasur ki vritti hai. They see Kamdhenu and say, by the way, whose is this? No, this is a different place. Everything belongs to everybody, nobody in particular. That's how heaven is supposed to be created. They said, oh, see, this is the way we interpret. So they are told, everything here belongs to everybody, but to nobody in particular. But implicit is it belongs to the divine. So to say, okay, nobody in particular, so we can drag it into my home. This is mine. So they started taking Kamdhenu, one of the Asura. They asked, say, why you? Why not me? So they started fighting. And a great war ensued. And all the gods said, sir, what are you doing? He says, wait. Then finally the Divine Mother intervenes and Ganesha comes. And this time also Shiva says, no, I have allowed. So Divine Mother says, hold on. Don't try your things on Ganesha again. Now he's under my protection. And therefore all of them meltdown takes place and the Asuras are driven out. So this is the two sides of Shiva. One is benevolent, quick to please. The other is Rudra, quick to destroy. Why? Because he acts always through a superconscient knowledge which transcends all reason. He's not there to create balance and order. That's after he has done the job. It's Vishnu Bhagwan's problem. He scatters the ruins. Now Brahma and Vishnu has to decide what to do with them. Probably they have to wait, release some new seeds. And then Vishnu. So they both have to wait and pray for Shiva to manifest again. Because he has done the job and gone into trance. But he holds all the seeds, can't help it. So we have this very beautiful poem called Epiphany. Epiphany is a great revelation. So this revelation is Epiphany. Immortal, moveless, calm, alone, august. See what names Shivabindu describes. Immortal. Moveless. You can't move him. It's only when Mother Parvati comes through love he is moved. That too, what love? Love purified of all desires. Calm. Alone. Because he is in that state, there is no creation. There is no two, there is no many. August. And therefore, he is grand beyond all. Is silence throned to just and to unjust, one Lord of still unutterable love. This love is held in his heart. He is one soul. He doesn't care whether you are a god or a titan. Everything has sprung from him. He just calls them all together. I saw him, mark the word Sri Aurobindo is writing. I saw him, Shiva, like a brooding dove. The story of the dove also, but I'll not touch upon that. I saw him, Shiva, like a brooding dove, close-winged upon her nest. The outcasts came, the sinners gathered to that quiet flame. The demons, by the other sterner gods, rejected from their luminous abodes. See, Somnatheshwar rejected. Still they go to Shiva. Where else they will go? Gathered around the refuge of the lost. He has the ultimate say. So he is the refuge of the lost. soft smiling on that wild and grisly host. He smiles, even the greatest of demon. Even Ravana has to succumb, you know. He thinks he can take him, he wants to appropriate him. But just one movement of Shiva and his hands are crushed and the famous Shiva's throat comes into being. All who were refugeless, wretched, unloved, the wicked and the good together moved naturally to him, the shelterer sweet, and found their heaven at their master's feet. If he has given shelter, he gives shelter invariably, and nobody can come and touch you. Because Shiva is under Shiva's shelter. That's why many of these asuras, you know, came. He said, Narayan has to try all kinds of methods. Banasur, all these that, you know, he has to try ways and means to cajole them, to lure them somewhere, this way, that way, to prevent. So this is the first aspect of Shiva. And then the second, the vision changed, and in its place there stood a terror red as lightning or as blood. His strong right hand, a javelin advanced. Now the Trishul. And as he shook it, earthquake, stumbling, danced across the hemisphere, ruin and plague rained out of heaven, disaster swift and vague. Even heavens begin to crumble when Shiva begins to dance. That story of the mother, all the gods would come and she asked them, will you participate in the new creation? Mother, we'll influence. Will you tie yourself to a body? Shiva is mighty. She describes him tall till the ceiling. He is all red. So he would not tie himself to a body. She says, I won't. But I'll help. Okay. So he starts the dancing. And the physical ego begins to get broken. Mother was wanting that the last remnant of the ego, physical ego, goes. Physical ego is that which ties us still to the body sense. So she experiences all her cells are just scattering. She goes to Sri Aurobindo and says, something very funny is happening to me. It was Shiva's boon. He was, okay, I'll help. So Sri Aurobindo looked at her and says, not yet. And everything stopped. That was the power of Sri Aurobindo's word. Shiva is dancing to destroy, and mother has asked for it, and Sri Aurobindo said, not yet. The time has not yet come. And then mother describes, this was 1926, and the time came in 1960 for this physical ego to be dissolved. Not yet, said Sri Aurobindo. But Krishna agreed to tie to the body. He is the original, one and only, who is there as delight. Without his delight, none of them would have the ecstasy in the dance or the destruction or creation or existence. It is this delight which is the first to enter into creation, the last to be recovered. So Krishna agreed. He tied himself to Sri Aurobindo's body. That story we know. But right now, neighbored a marching multitude of ills, his foot strode forward to oppress the hills. And at the vision of his burning eyes, the hearts of men grew faint with dread surmise. It is only the strong who are happy when this happens. We have one example of Swami Vivekananda. He was eye of Shiva. And he says, toward the end of his life, last bit, mother, rain misery, rain ruin on me. Literally, he's ready to accept everything. And you read Sister Nivedita, the master, as I saw him. But most people run away. Why? If he's destroying, there is a greater plan which is waiting. The hearts of men grew faint and with dread surmise of sin and punishment. The cry was loud. This is the last judgment which is spoken of. And the mother speaks about it. men, countries, continents, the choice is imperative. Truth or the abyss. So some disciple like this got afraid. Mother, what are you saying? She says, disciple has nothing to fear. If you have faith, you have nothing to fear. It is only for those who are continuing to live in a world of deception and lie and falsehood. You don't have to fear. But these fellows suddenly realized that till now he was the refuge of the lost. But now we have overpassed the limit and now he has stood up. So what they cry? Their cry was loud. O master of the storm, wind and the cloud, spare, Rudra, spare. Show us that other form, auspicious, not incarnate, wrath and storm. So we know that Sri Aurobindo writes in Essays on the Gita, the debt to Rudra must be paid before the law of Vishnu can prevail. Therefore, Sri Krishna manifests as Kalosmi. He is time the destroyer. And then Arjuna also says, please manifest that nice little cute form of yours, so Vishnu Bhagwan. Chaturbhuja Rupi comes. There's very interesting stories of Krishna and Shiva. It is said in one of the Puranas, Mahabhagavata or anyways. So where did Vrindavan Ras, men are not allowed. Why? Because there is only one male in the universe. All else, souls are all feminine. But Sri Krishna is dancing with all of them. But to reach there, you have to change into a feminine form. How you will change? By dipping into Yamuna. So Yamuna, again, there is a reason. Yamuna, Yami, sister of Yama. But again, you have to die to that, all that sense. Gender. We have our own way of, you know, gender neutrality and going beyond gender. So, femininity, feminine power. So they becomes feminine. So there are only two males who have ever danced with Krishna in Vrindavan. If you go, you become mad if you try to do that. So even now in Vrindavan, people know that place, Nidhivan, is they are like jhaad. They become in the daytime. At night, the dance takes place. There are only two men who ever did this. One, of course, is the mighty warrior, hero warrior Arjuna. He takes a dip. He says, but I can't leave you like this. I want to experience that Vrindavan, that ras which you did with the gop and gopis. So he takes a dip and he dances with Krishna. And the other is the only one and only Shiva. He becomes a female and the two dance. They have very sweet relation. That's how we see in Harihar, Ardhanarishwar. Again the force that comes out. And out of Harihar, the coming together. We know that story of Bhasmasura. Again, too many stories. Let me not go into it. But out of that union of Hari and Hara is born our Lord Ayappa nearby. So very, very fascinating story. But too many of them. We'll come back to the vision of Rudra. So the God of force, the God of love are one. Love create. With that force of love we create. But Shiva is the destroyer, absorbs back. He doesn't destroy, he gives moksha. Releases them back into nirvikalp state. That's what is nirvikalp samadhi. And there is something beyond both savikalp and nirvikalp, but that's a different story altogether. There is the supramental creation. Not least he loves when most he smites. It's one of my favorite lines and I'm sure everybody will fall in love with this line. The God of foes and the God of love are one. Not least he loves whom most he smites alone. Who towers above fear and plays with grief. So we should always remember that whomever he loves most, he smites most. Defeat and death inherits full relief. Who towers above fear and plays with grief? Whoever can go beyond all fear and grief. He says, okay, you want to play grief? Come. But who can play with grief? Who holds Krishna's delight inside. Come, let's play grief. So what happens to him? Who towers above fear and plays with grief? Defeat and death inherits full relief. This is the secret of moksha. Not by simply, you know, taking a crash course in Nirvana, paying some $1,000, or simply sitting inert like that. That will be a Nirvana in inertia, inconscient. But to rise above fear and grief, defeat and death, none of this should afflict or affect us, which means the ego must die otherwise. He inherits full relief. This has nothing to do with cutting the cycles of rebirth. Defeat and death inherits full relief from blindness and beholds the single form, love masking terror, peace supporting storm. So whoever can rise above defeat, death, grief, fear, he holds the oneness of the one divine everywhere. In all oneself, place with all. And then we discover behind the mask of terror, behind Shri Krishna, Kalosmi, the same sweet smiling face. And peace supporting storm. See, peace is always, any eye of the storm is always, even see, material nature creates the same replicas. There is peace. Behind all the anger, all this, you will, if you go deep inside, you will see there is love. But you have to touch that core. It's taken this shape, crude shape. Now this last. The friend of man helps him with life and death until he knows. So he takes him through this cycle until he knows. Man knows. What does he know? Until he knows, then freed from mortal breath, grief, pain, resentment, terror pass away. He feels the joy of the immortal play. He doesn't mind coming 1,000 times. Because he finds, oh, this is delightful. It was not terror, grief were my mistranslations. Now one is ready for the play of Krishna. Shiva tok pit ke tayar kar. You know, you are freed from the fear of death. You died to the ego. Now the play begins. The next level. He has the silence and the unflinching force. This is not the silence of inertia, of shower, but the silence of Shiva, which is one with force. He knows the oneness and the eternal course. Such a one knows the oneness. At the same time, this oneness knows how this one force is taking different courses in the entire play at different stages in the manifestation. He too is Rudra and thunder and the fire. He, Shiva and the white light, no shadows tire. The strength that rides abroad on time's wide wings, beyond time, time's wide wings. Below him, time is flapping its play. The calm in the heart of all immortal things. I'll close with this quaternary which Shivabindu speaks of, which I mentioned. I'll just read it. We all can find it in Essays Divine and Human. It's amazing. But already we have hinted at what it is there. So this creation story described in the Purana, now Shivabindu says something before that. The supramental, where the one holds all these together. One that is two that are many. This is the formula of the eternal and timeless manifestation in the worlds of Sachidananda. There are no four yet. Huh? One that is two that are many. Everything is there within. One that is two. The divine and the Shakti. Ishwara and Shakti and the many. All of us somewhere. Not somewhere. There. One who is two and becomes the two who become many. This is the formula of the perpetual manifestation in time in the three worlds of mind, life and matter. In Sachidananda, it is the formula of the eternal and limitless manifestation. Here, becoming the many. So there, we are all together, happily, not fighting over all the different things. We are always happily together because we know Sachidananda. So then, as for manifestation, this is the formula. One who is himself forever, the two, and forever innumerably, all and eternal and infinite, this is the indication of the supreme, who is beyond time and timelessness in the highest absolute. Now come the four. The one is four forever in a supramental quaternary of being, consciousness, force and ananda. So see, later on this trinity is coming down much lower. Then we, you know, that differentiation each is. But in the supreme, what does the supermind does? Now comes supermind, it differentiates without losing the oneness. That is the beauty. In overmind, the one is Lord, lost. So one is abode is Mount Kailash, another is in Sheer Sagar. It's symbolic and beautiful. The other in Brahmalok. But in the supermind, they are differentiates. But they are together. There is oneness is not lost. So that is the conception of the three Trimurti who become one. That's in conception human beings have taken that. Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, Krishna. These are the eternal four. The quadruple infinite. Brahma is the eternal personality of existence. From him all is supported. From him all is created. By his presence, by his power, by his impulse. Vishnu is the eternal personality of consciousness. In him all is supported, in his wideness, in his stability, in his substance. Shiva is the eternal personality of force. Through him all is created. Through his passion, Nataraj. Through his rhythm, Nadbrahm, Damru. Through his concentration, the Tapasvi, the Lord of Tapasya. Krishna is the eternal personality of Ananda. Because of him, all creation is possible. They create, but all creation is possible. Because of his play, because of his delight, because of his sweetness. Otherwise, who would stay in this creation? People keep saying, moksha, 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 rebirth, sansara, bahut difficult, all this. Tell them, okay, we are going to get you a free ticket, pass away. No, sir, my grandchild has to get married. This is what you will hear. Because of his sweetness, Krishna has held them together. Because of his delight. Brahma is immortality. Existence, which is immortal. Vishnu is eternity. So he is the consciousness in this play, which will always be there. Shiva is infinity. There is no limit. Krishna is the supremes, eternal, infinite, immortal self-possession, self-issuing, self-manifestation, self-finding. Jai Maa.